following one's heart, getting involved with the wrong sort of boy, getting a bad reputation, that sort of thing. Ah, Mum nodded contritely. Well, you see, I can't do that. I suppose I'm not worried about you doing the wrong thing, Sadie. I am worried that you might be afraid to trust someone, even the right someone. It's your heart, of course, not mine. But I'd say Walt is more nervous than you are. Don't be too hard on him.
Hard on him?
I almost laughed. I don't even know where he is. And he's hosting a guard whom you also like, Mum supplied. And that's confusing. Yes, but they are really one person now. Anubis has so much in common with Walt. Neither has ever had a real life to look forward to. Now, together, they do.
You mean...
The horrible burning sensation behind my sternum began to ease ever so slightly.
You mean I will see him again? He's not exiled, or whatever nonsense the gods are going on about?
You will see him, my mother affirmed. Because they are one, inhabiting a single mortal body, they may walk the earth as the ancient Egyptian god-kings did. Walt and Anubis are both good young men. They are both nervous and quite awkward in the mortal world, and scared about how people will treat them, and they both feel the same way about you. I was probably blushing terribly. Carter stared at me from the top of the dais, no doubt wondering what was wrong. I didn't trust myself to meet his eyes. He was a bit too good at reading my expression.
"It's so bloody hard," I complained.
Mother laughed softly. "Yes, it is. But if it's any consolation, dealing with any man means dealing with multiple personalities." I glanced up at my father, who was flickering back and forth between Dr. Julius Kane and Osiris, the smurf-blue god of the underworld.
"I take your point," I said. "But where is Anubis? I mean, Walt. Ugh, there I go again."
"You will see him soon," Mum promised. "I wanted you to be prepared." My mind said, "This is too confusing, too unfair. I can't handle a relationship like this." But my heart said, "Shut up. Yes, I can."
"Thanks, Mum," I said, no doubt failing miserably to look calm and collected. "This business with the gods pulling away, does that mean we won't see you and Dad as much?"
"Probably," she admitted. "But you know what to do. Keep teaching the path of the gods. Bring the House of Life back to its former glory. You and Carter and Amos will make Egyptian magic stronger than ever. And that's good, because your challenges are not over."
"Setna?" I guessed.
"Yes, him," Mum said. "But there are other challenges as well. I haven't completely lost the gift of prophecy, even in death. I see murky visions of other gods and rival magic."
That really didn't sound good. "What do you mean?" I asked. "What other gods?"
"I don't know, Sadie, but Egypt has always faced challenges from outside. Magicians from elsewhere, even gods from elsewhere. Just be vigilant."
"Lovely," I muttered. I preferred talking about boys.
Mother laughed. "Once you return to the mortal world, there will be one more portal. Look for it tonight. Some old friends of yours would like a word."
I had a feeling I knew whom she meant. She touched a ghostly pendant around her neck, the Ta'it symbol of Isis.
"If you need me," Mum said, "use your necklace. It will call to me, just as the Shen necklace calls to Walt."
That would have been handy to know sooner.
Our connection wasn't strong enough before. Now, I think it is.
She kissed my forehead, though it felt like only a faint, cool breeze.
"I'm proud of you, Sadie. You have your whole life ahead of you. Make the most of it."
That night at Brooklyn House, a swirling sand portal opened on the terrace, just as my mother had promised. "That's for us," I said, getting up from the dinner table. "Come on, brother dear." On the other side of the portal, we found ourselves at the beach by the Lake of Fire. Bast was waiting, tossing a ball of yarn from hand to hand. Her pure black bodysuit matched her hair. Her feline eyes danced in the red light of the waves.
"They're waiting for you."
She pointed up the steps to the House of Rest.
"We'll talk when you come back down."
I didn't need to ask why she wasn't coming. I heard the melancholy in her voice. She and Tawarit had never got along because of Bess. Obviously, Bast wanted to give the hippo goddess some space. But also, I wondered if my old friend was starting to realize that she'd let a good man get away. I kissed her on the cheek. Then Carter and I climbed the stairs. Inside the nursing home, the atmosphere was festive. Fresh flowers decorated the nurse's station. Hekette, the frog goddess, walked upside down along the ceiling, hanging party streamers, while a group of elderly dog-headed gods danced and sang the Hokey Pokey, a very slow version, but still impressive.
"You put your walker in, you put your ivy out,"
and so forth. The ancient lion-headed goddess Mekhit was slow-dancing with a tall male god. She purred loudly with her head on his shoulder.
"Carter, look," I said. "Is that..."
"Onuris," Tawarit answered, trotting over in her nurse's outfit. "Mekhit's husband. Isn't it wonderful? We were sure he'd faded ages ago, but when Bess called the old guards to war, Onuris came tottering out of a supply closet. Many others appeared, too. They were finally needed, you see. The war gave them a reason to exist."
The hippo goddess crushed us in an enthusiastic hug.
"Oh, my dears, just look how happy everyone is. You've given them new life."
"I don't see as many as before," Carter noticed.
"Some went back to the heavens," Tawarit said, "or off to their old temples and palaces. And, of course, your dear father Osiris took the judgment gods back to his throne room."
Seeing the old gods so happy warmed my heart, but I still felt a twinge of worry. "Will they stay this way? I mean, they won't fade again." Tawarit spread her stubby hands.
"I suppose that depends on you mortals. If you remember them and make them feel important, they should be fine. But come, you want to see Bess."
He sat in his usual chair, staring blankly out the window at the lake of fire. The scene was so familiar, I feared he'd lost his wren again. "Is he all right?" I cried, running up to him. "What's wrong with him?" Bess turned, looking startled.
"Besides being ugly? Nothing, kid. I was just thinking. Sorry."
He rose, as much as a dwarf can rise, and hugged us both.
"Glad you kids could make it,"
Bess said.
"You know, Tawarit and I are going to build a home on the lakeside. I've gotten used to this view. She'll keep working at the House of Rest. I'll be a house dwarf for a while. Who knows? Maybe I'll get some little dwarf hippo babies to look after."
"Oh, Bess!"
Tawarit blushed fiercely and batted her hippo eyelids. The dwarf god chuckled.
"Yeah, life is good. But if you kids need me, just holler. I've always had more luck coming to the mortal world than most gods."
Carter scowled fretfully. "Do you think we'll need you a lot? I mean, of course we want to see you. I just wondered..." Bess grunted.
"Hey! I'm an ugly dwarf. I've got a sweet car, an excellent wardrobe, and amazing powers. Why wouldn't you need me?"
"Good point," Carter agreed.
"But, don't call too often," Bess said. "After all, my honey cakes and I got a few millennia of quality time to catch up on."
He took Tawarit's hand, and for once I didn't find the name of this place, Sunny Acres, quite so depressing. "Thank you for everything, Bess," I said.
"Are you kidding?" he said. "You gave me my life back, and I don't just mean my shadow."
I got the distinct feeling the two gods wanted some time by themselves, so we said our goodbyes and headed down the steps to the lake. The white sand portal was still swirling. Bast stood next to it, engrossed in her ball of yarn. She laced it between her fingers to make a rectangle like a cat's cradle. No, I didn't mean that as a pun, but it did seem appropriate. "Having fun?" I asked.
"Thought you'd want to see this."
She held up the cat's cradle. A video image flickered across its surface like on a computer screen. I saw the Hall of the Gods, with its soaring columns and polished floors, its braziers burning with 100 multicolored fires. On the central dais, the sunboat had been replaced with a golden throne. Horus sat there in his human form, a bald, muscular teen in full battle armor. He held a crook and flail across his lap, and his eyes gleamed, one silver, one gold. At his right stood Isis, smiling proudly, her rainbow wings shimmering. On his left stood Set, the red-skinned chaos god with his iron staff. He looked quite amused, as if he had all sorts of wicked things planned for later. The other gods knelt as Horus addressed them. I scanned the crowd for Anubis, with or without Walt, but again I didn't see him. I couldn't hear the words, but I reckoned it was a similar speech to the one Carter had delivered to the House of Life. "He's doing the same thing I did," Carter protested. "I bet he even stole my speech, that copycat!" Bast clucked disapprovingly.
"No need to call names, Carter. Cats are not copiers. We are all unique. But yes, what you do as Pharaoh in the mortal world will often be mirrored in the world of the gods. Horus and you, after all, rule the forces of Egypt."
"That," I said, "is a truly scary thought." Carter swatted me lightly on the arm. "I just can't believe that Horus left without even a goodbye. It's as if he tossed me aside as soon as he was done using me and then forgot about me."
"Oh, no," Bast said. "Gods wouldn't do that. He simply had to leave."
But I wondered. Gods were rather selfish creatures, even those who weren't cats. Isis hadn't given me a proper goodbye, or a thank you, either. "Bast, you're coming with us, aren't you?" I pleaded. "I mean, this silly exile can't apply to you. We need our nap instructor at Brooklyn House." Bast wadded up her ball of yarn and tossed it down the steps. Her expression was quite sad for a feline.
"Oh, my kittens, if I could, I would pick you up by the scruffs of your necks and carry you forever. But you've grown. Your claws are sharp, your eyesight is keen, and cats must make their own way in the world. I must say farewell for now, though I'm sure we'll meet again."
I wanted to protest that I hadn't grown up and I didn't even have claws. Carter disagrees, but what does he know? But part of me knew Bast was right. We'd been lucky to have her with us for so long. Now we had to be adult cats, humans. "Oh, Muffin!" I hugged her fiercely and could feel her purring. She ruffled my hair. Then she rubbed Carter's ears, which was quite funny.
"Go on now," she said, "before I start to mule. Besides..."
She fixed her eyes on the ball of yarn which had rolled to the bottom of the steps. She crouched and tensed her shoulders.
"I have some hunting to do."
"We'll miss you, Bast," I said, trying not to cry. "Good hunting."
"Yarn," she said absently, creeping down the steps. "Dangerous prey, yarn."
Carter and I stepped through the portal. This time it deposited us onto the roof of Brooklyn House. We had one more surprise. Standing by Freak's roost, Walt was waiting. He smiled when he saw me, and my legs felt wobbly.
"I'll, be inside," Carter said.
Walt walked over, and I tried to remember how to breathe. 22. The Last Waltz. For now. He'd changed his look again. His amulets were gone, except for one, the Shen that matched mine. He wore a black muscle shirt, black jeans, a black leather duster, and black combat boots, a sort of mix of Anubis's and Walt's styles, but it made him look like someone entirely different and new. Yet his eyes were quite familiar, warm, dark brown, and lovely. When he smiled, my heart fluttered as it always had. "So," I said, "is this another goodbye? I've had quite enough goodbyes today."
"Actually," Walt said, "it's more of a hello. My name's Walt Stone from Seattle. I'd like to join the party."
He held out his hand, still smiling slyly. He was repeating exactly what he'd said the first time we met when he arrived at Brooklyn House last spring. Instead of taking his hand, I punched him in the chest. "Ow!" he complained, but I doubt that I'd hurt him. He had quite a solid chest. "You think you can just merge with a god and surprise me like that?" I demanded. "Oh, by the way, I'm actually two minds in one body. I don't appreciate being taken off guard."
"I did try to tell you," he said, "several times. Anubis did too. We kept getting interrupted, mostly by you talking a lot."
"No excuse." I folded my arms and scowled as best I could. "My mum seems to think I should go easy on you because this is all very new to you, but I'm still cross. It's confusing enough, you know, liking someone without their morphing into a god whom I also like."
"So you do like me?"
"Stop trying to distract me. Are you truly asking to stay here?"
Walt nodded.
He was very close now. He smelled good, like vanilla candles. I tried to remember if that was Wart's scent or Anubis's. Honestly, I couldn't recall.
"I've still got a lot to learn," he said. "I don't need to stick with charm making anymore. I can do more intensive magic. The path of Anubis. No one's ever done that before."
"Discovering new magical ways to annoy me?" He tilted his head.
"I could do amazing tricks with mummy linen. For instance, if someone talks too much, I could summon a gag."
"Don't you dare!" He took my hand. I gave him a defiant scowl, but I didn't take back my hand.
"I'm still Walt," he said. "I'm still mortal. Anubis can stay in this world as long as I'm his host. I'm hoping to live a good, long life. Neither of us ever thought that was possible. So I'm not going anywhere, unless you want me to leave."
My eyes probably answered for me. "No, please, not ever." But I couldn't very well give him the satisfaction of my saying that out loud, could I? Boys can get so full of themselves. "Well," I grumbled, "I suppose I could tolerate it."
"I owe you a dance."
Walt put his other hand on my waist, a traditional pose, very old-fashioned, as Anubis had done when we waltzed at the Brooklyn Academy. My gran would have approved.
"May I?"
he asked. "Here," I said. "Won't your chaperone shoe interrupt?"
"Like I said, I'm mortal now." "He'll let us dance, though I'm sure he's keeping an eye on us to make sure we behave."
"To make sure you behave," I snipped. "I am a proper young lady." Walt laughed. I suppose it was funny. Proper wasn't the first word normally used to describe me. I pounded his chest again, though I'll admit not very hard. I put my hand on his shoulder. "I'll have you remember," I warned, "that my father is your employer in the underworld. You'd best mind your manners."
"Yes, ma'am,"
Walt said. He leaned down and kissed me. All my anger melted into my shoes. We started to dance. There was no music, no ghostly dancers, no floating on air, nothing magic about it. Freak watched us curiously, no doubt wondering how this activity was going to produce turkeys to feed the griffin. The old tar roof creaked under our feet. I was still quite tired from our long battle, and I hadn't cleaned up properly. No doubt I looked horrid. I wanted to melt into Walt's arms, which is basically what I did.
"So you'll let me stick around?"
he asked, his breath warm on my scalp.
"Let me experience a typical teenage life?"
"I suppose." I looked up at him. It took no effort at all to slip my vision into the Duat and see Anubis there, just under the surface. But it really wasn't necessary. This was a new boy in front of me, and he was everything I liked. Not that I'm an expert myself, but there is one rule I insist on.
"Yes?"
"If anyone asks you if you're taken," I said, "the answer is yes."
"I think I can live with that,"
he promised. "Good," I said, "because you don't want to see me be cross."
"Too late."
"Shut up and dance, Walt." We did, with the music of a psychotic griffin screaming behind us and the sirens and horns of Brooklyn wailing below. It was quite romantic. So, there you have it. We've returned to Brooklyn House. The various catastrophes plaguing the world have lessened, at least somewhat, and we are dealing with an influx of new initiates as the school year gets properly underway. It should be obvious now why this may be our last recording. We're going to be so busy training and attending school and living our lives, I doubt we'll have time or reason to send out any more audio pleas for help. We'll put this tape in a secure box and send it along to the chap who's been transcribing our adventures. Carter seems to think the postal service will do, but I think I'll give it to Hufu to carry through the Duat. What could possibly go wrong? As for us, don't think our lives will be all fun and games. Amos couldn't leave a mob of teens unsupervised, and as we don't have Bast any more, Amos has sent a few adult magicians to Brooklyn House as teachers, read chaperones. But we all know who's really in charge. Me. Oh, yes, and perhaps Carter a little bit. We're not done with trouble, either. I'm still worried about that murderous ghost Setna, who's on the loose in the world with his devious mind, horrible fashion sense, and the Book of Toth. I'm also puzzling over my mother's comments about rival magic and other gods. No idea what that means, but it doesn't sound good. In the meantime, there are still hot spots of evil magic and demon activity all over the world that we have to take care of. We've even got reports of unexplainable magic as close as Long Island. Probably have to check that out. But for now, I plan on enjoying my life, annoying my brother as much as possible, and making Walt into a proper boyfriend while keeping the other girls away from him, most likely with a flamethrower. My work is never done. As for you lot out there listening to this recording, we're never too busy for new initiates. If you have the blood of the pharaohs, what are you waiting for? Don't let your magic go to waste. Brooklyn House is open for business.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Serpent's Shadow by Rick Riordan. Copyright 2012 by Rick Riordan. Performed by Catherine Kellgren and Kevin R. Free. Directed by Mae Wuthridge. Performance copyright 2012 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.